take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, August 24th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show from beautiful, hazy, legal Potland, Oregon. No, folks, that's not pot smoke that's clouding us up here in Oregon. It's our forests. Our forests are ablaze all across the West. In fact, they've had fires up in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State, a literal rainforest where the residents there can't remember the last time they had a wildfire. So this drought is serious. It's more than just California. I took a trip to the Oregon coast this weekend, and during that whole drive, it was just haze, haze, haze until we finally made it to the ocean. So good luck to all the firefighters out there, and stay safe. I had a lot of friends back in Idaho when I lived there who were volunteers and joined those firefighting crews, sometimes worked as firefighters out there in the forest. It's a very, very dangerous job. And we appreciate everyone that is doing it. On today's show, it is Monday, so we will have our regular dose of cannabis science in our cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine coming up at half past. He'll answer your live questions on cannabis science, culture, history, and health. You can get those questions into our chat room at 420radio.org. Just click the login button and use the Facebook or Ustream login to get involved in our chat room. Our friendly fellows there in the chat room will probably tell you how to do it if you just pay attention. I'm sure they'll say something up there pretty soon. And also, we take phone calls for Dr. Mitch as well, toll free at our studio line 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at the state of Maine and how a medical marijuana patient there is suffering because of the bureaucracy between the federal and state government on medical marijuana, even when we're talking about non-intoxicating lotions. And then in our drug war data mining, we're going to take a look at the continent of Africa. Is it the next big global marijuana market? I've been doing some research today, and things look pretty good for development of the cannabis business infrastructures in Africa. We'll talk about that in drug war data mining. Also on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant at the end. Legal marijuana shouldn't mean only in your home. We're going to take a look at how legalization is actually stuffing us back into the cannabis closet, and we'll talk about what to do about it. Then, live listeners, stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to talk about these Western wildfires, and also, in a very Portland quirk, we've got Portland food carts. Well, now there's a Portland weed cart. We'll give you the update on the Portland mobile weed cart that made its debut this weekend. Also in Hour 2, we'll have Bacon Dan calling in with our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tune of the Day, followed by a look at a disabled teacher and Army veteran who's been imprisoned and his life ruined because of his zip code, and how America's legal weed is changing the black market for marijuana. A new Vice News article that quotes yours truly. All that and more coming up on the Russ Melville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, what's up? It's Herb Thrasher, and you're listening to 420 Radio. Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the fourth Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
Hey, I'm Herb Thrasher, host of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 Pacific. Tune in for 2 hours of metal marijuana mayhem featuring exclusive interviews with the latest bands, highlights of live shows, and the latest in marijuana news. It's the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Friday nights at 8 p.m. at 420 Radio, or catch the replay on Saturday night.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Replays of 420 Radio News are embeddable and shareable from our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Now, the marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 24th, 2015. Shona Banda, a Garden City, Kansas mother who faces 3 felonies and 2 misdemeanors for marijuana use, pleaded not guilty Monday. Susan Richmeyer, Finney County District Attorney, said in an email a preliminary hearing is set for November 16th. Law enforcement and Kansas Department of Children and Families officials started investigating Banda after her 11-year-old son said that his mom smokes a lot during an anti-drug program at Bernadine Sitz School in Garden City. The 11-year-old could cite various strains of marijuana, according to Banda's arrest affidavit. Banda and her attorney, Sarah Swain, could not be reached for comment Monday. In an interview last month, Banda talked about how cannabis oil has helped her cope with her Crohn's disease when she said other medical remedies did not. Banda wrote a book about her marijuana use to treat her disease called Live Free or Die, Reclaim Your Life, Reclaim Your Country. Pro-marijuana group Responsible Ohio has purchased airtime on broadcast stations around the state to try to persuade Ohioans to vote yes on Issue 3, which would legalize marijuana for recreational and medical use. The ad, airing across the state, features Howard Rotz, a former Cincinnati Police Department captain who has written and spoken about battling illegal drug trafficking. Rotz is also a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a national organization of current and former officers who believe anti-drug laws don't work and often advocate legalizing marijuana. Here is the ad.
As a police officer, I walked the beat, served on the vice squad and SWAT team, and became an expert on drug addiction. I saw firsthand the effects of Ohio's destructive marijuana laws. Simply put, they don't work. Ohio spends over $100 million each year on this failed effort. It's time for marijuana reform, so law enforcement can spend their time cracking down on real criminals and making Ohio a safer place for our families. Vote yes on 3.
The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol in Arizona held a press conference showing a fake $40 million check to represent the annual tax revenue that would be raised for schools by legalized marijuana. The Arizona Republic responded by publishing an editorial suggesting the campaign was so stoned they might, quote, try to deposit that thing, end quote, calling the $40 million claim, quote, a lie, and that it was, quote, bunk pulled out of thin air, end quote. The Republic was forced to correct its article when advocates pointed to official tax revenue figures showing that Colorado raised $13.3 million in year one and is on pace to exceed $30 million in this year, with a growth rate that suggests $40 million per year will easily be attained in year 3. In its correction, the Republic also changed its reference that marijuana tax revenue would not, quote, build one high school, end quote, to noting that it would build, quote, one high school and start a second, end quote.
Many of the world's junior miners are laying down their picks and shovels to start new ventures ranging from egg exporting to medical marijuana farming as they try to survive a crash in metals prices by shifting away from exploration. Prices for copper, gold, iron ore, coal, and almost every other metal have collapsed, stalling exploration work and hitting early stage miners particularly hard. Supreme Pharmaceuticals, which was a copper and gold exporter with projects in Western Canada, is now seeking a license to grow medical marijuana in Canada and has bought a greenhouse facility in Ontario. Australia's Aran Resources, which was previously exploring for gold in Senegal, has ventured into the medical marijuana business. International Goldfields, listed in Australia, has also moved away from mining and is now investing in medical marijuana assets overseas, and Clormet Technologies, formerly Newton Gold, now has a pending license to grow medical marijuana. The owner of Dell's Maraschino Cherries, who killed himself when investigators discovered a secret pot farm at his Brooklyn factory, wanted his $8.5 million estate to go to his family, but that plan may have soured. The Cherry King, Arthur Mondella, left his three daughters and his sister each a stake of 20% or more in his lucrative business. The filing shows the properties he owned account for $8 million of the estate, his cherry company, $20 million annual revenue, but the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office may seize some of the assets because of his marijuana farming. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 24th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges.
Hey, Mo!
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Today in Behind the Headlines, we go to the state of Maine and the Portland Press Herald, which reports that Sanford Hospital patient denied medical marijuana. Eric Chipman's case shows how hospitals and some of their patients are caught in the conflict between state and federal medical marijuana laws, written by Jillian Graham at the Press Herald. The story is about a man named Eric Chipman. He's 64 years old. He was injured in a motorcycle accident in 1976. Had more than a dozen broken bones, broken hip, broken pelvis. He's had four bone grafts, a hip replacement, discs removed from his back. He's in a wheelchair, can't keep his head and neck upright for long periods of time. Carpal tunnel, stiffness, and pain are a daily reminder of that accident since 1976. Now, Chipman says he's been using medical marijuana since the 1970s, long before it was medical marijuana legally in the state of Maine or anywhere for that matter. He moved to Sanford, Maine from New Hampshire last year because he could become a medical marijuana patient in Maine and access medical marijuana legally. That's an important distinction. A lot of these medical marijuana states, especially back east, the access is more difficult. Just trying to get to a dispensary to find what you need. Better selection in Maine, apparently. So he smokes marijuana every day and uses a topical form of marijuana every day, a lotion that he uses. And he says, quote, "It's just enough to take the edge off the pain and stay away from narcotics. It's a emu oil, aloe, and cannabis blend. It doesn't provide a high, this topical, but it's the only thing that will give him relief from the pain in his hands." He says, quote, "With medical marijuana, I can tie a bow with a piece of yarn. These fingers will move in every direction. Without it, I have to use two hands to pick up a water bottle, and I can't tie my shoes." So it's clearly medical marijuana that this man is using. Clearly living a life of now, what, almost four decades of pain from a motorcycle accident. And yet he's in the hospital. He has to go to the Southern Maine Healthcare in Sanford. He's there for a couple weeks. And he told his doctors he was rubbing this marijuana lotion, this THC lotion. I don't even know if it's THC. Maybe it's just CBD. But a marijuana-based lotion into his skin. And he's happy to tell the doctors that it relieves the pain better than the narcotic painkillers the doctors keep trying to push on him. The Oxycontins and the Vicodins and those kind of things. Unfortunately for him, being honest meant that Eric Chipman was told by the hospital officials, you got to get the lotions off the hospital property. So this is because they say, well, it's hospital policy. It's also because of federal law, right? These hospitals have a lot of interface with the federal government. And even though the state of Maine allows for medical use, and Eric Chipman is a medical marijuana patient registered with the state of Maine, that does not matter. This man has to go without this medicated lotion. And so, according to the Press Herald, the loss of his medicine slowed Chipman's recovery, he said, because of pain and inflexibility that makes it harder to do physical therapy sessions and gain back the strength he needs to care for himself and get in and out of his wheelchair. So, just the horror that must exist for this man, knowing that he's going to have to face pain, he's going to have to live less quality of life for having been honest with doctors in a legal state about the curative that he was using that was helping his condition. In a sane society, these doctors would be jumping over each other trying to document what's going on and trying to express to this world this new great finding that helps this 64-year-old man who suffered 40 years of pain be able to deal with his life in a better, less narcotic-induced stupor. This would be a miracle in a sane world. But as you know, we don't live in a sane world. And these hospitals have to worry more about the administrators and more about the federal laws than what is best for their patients. Now, many doctors and many nurses will just turn a blind eye. That's something that's been happening since the 70s and before for cancer patients. Oncology wards are famous for a certain smell that doctors and nurses would somehow just not notice. But we shouldn't have to wink and nudge and hide and sneak to get the best possible treatment to these people like Eric Chipman. When we recognize as a state that marijuana has medicinal properties, as societies have recognized since Emperor Shenang thousands of years ago, it's time for the federal government to butt out of this, and it's time to untangle these connections between the federal government and our healthcare by ending this Schedule I designation of cannabis. At the very least, moving it down to Schedule 3
or lower, or descheduling it altogether. The Pure Food and Drug Act and the Controlled Substances Act and all of these 20th century legal interpretations of how to deal with medicine are patently unconstitutional and unfair and unrealistic for the patients and doctors to get the best quality care in the most possible circumstances. Yep, illegal it is. And because of that one little word, Eric Chipman has to suffer more than he should in a state where the voters think he shouldn't, because some bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. don't like the idea that he's using a non-intoxicating form of cannabis to relieve pain.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a strong advertising and marketing namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific for Canna Truths, podcasting at cannatruths.com. Canna Truths is your premier source for cannabis-related news and events around the U.S. and the world. Denton Ramsey is a writer for over 15 years and a cannabis activist, and began Canna Truths in December of 2011. Check our online listings for Canna Truths with Denton Ramsey from cannatruths.com.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Drug War Data Mine, we're going to take a look at Africa and whether it is the next big global marijuana market. Last week, I did a story on South Africa's parliament debating the bill that would legalize DACA, as they call marijuana, or just allow medical marijuana use. That's where it's still the battle lies there. And the rest of the African continent continues to produce and use cannabis at rates that rival North America. Now, the source here for the Drug War Data Mine is the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC. If you Google that, you'll be able to get right to it. UNODC. Lots of data up there on global drug trends. In their 2009 report, Cannabis in Africa, they said, quote, "The highest levels of cannabis production in the world take place on the African continent," end quote. Now, granted, the report's based on cultivation data from 2005, before marijuana production became commercially legal in some of the United States. But at the time, according to the report, Africa made up, quote, "roughly 25% of global production of cannabis herb," end quote. Now, I scanned the site trying to find newer global production data, but I couldn't find any before I had to go on the air, but at least back in 2005, one quarter of global cannabis herb was produced in Africa. Now, more cannabis is seized by police in North America, but Africa is a very close second place. And country-wise, behind the United States and Mexico, South Africa is the country with the third greatest amount of cannabis seized. In fact, South Africa makes up 40% of all African cannabis seized. Another UNODC document is the World Drug Report for 2015, and according to it, Africa's estimated rate of annual cannabis usage by people aged 15 to 64 is 7.5%, and that's almost double the global average of 3.9%. Africa's continental rate is third behind Oceania, you know, that includes Australia, at 10.7%, and North America at 11.6%. However, the West and Central Africans are using at a rate of 12.4% of their population per year, outdoing North America. Of course, cannabis is not native to Africa. Historians estimate its arrival on the continent took place in the 14th century as Arab trade came to Ethiopia. By 1881, German explorers Hermann Wissmann and Dr. Paul Poggi explored areas in what is now the Democratic Republic of the Congo and found a tribe called the Bashalenge that smoked cannabis as often as possible, attributing to it magical powers. They called themselves Bena Riamba, or the Sons of Hemp, and their greeting Moyo meant both life and hemp. Interesting history. Now, cannabis is becoming an economic engine in parts of Africa. The UNODC's Cannabis in Africa report notes that Lesotho, the independent nation surrounded by South Africa, produces 70% of the cannabis that enters South Africa. Cannabis farming in Lesotho ranks as the third largest source of income in a country where over one in four are unemployed. In Swaziland, surrounded by eastern South Africa on the northwest and south, and Mozambique on the east, unemployment hovers around 40%. There, the New York Times in 2012 profiled grandmothers who were cultivating the powerful marijuana strain Swazi Gold for sale in South Africa. The country, Africa's last absolute monarchy, also boasts the world's highest HIV infection rate, leaving these grandmothers to raise orphans of their own sons and daughters. "Without weed, we would be starving," said one peasant farmer to the New York Times. Even so, a typical family cannabis farm in Swaziland is producing 25 pounds of marijuana that sells for just $400 American dollars. In case any North American growers hearing this are complaining about only getting $1,600 per pound of harvested marijuana, imagine having to compete globally with Africans willing to produce for 1% of that price. That time may be coming sooner than we think. While no country in Africa has yet officially legalized cannabis, Mozambique, on Africa's southeast coast, has a strong marijuana culture, and family cannabis plantations are largely tolerated by authorities. In 2011, there was a 900% increase in cannabis seized from Mozambique compared to the year prior. As marijuana prohibition falls in several of the United States, justification for international treaties forbidding national marijuana legalization becomes harder to maintain. African countries feeling the brunt of global economic downturn will eventually warm up to the billions in revenues and skyrocketing growth of the marijuana market. Someday, the Durban poison strain you've been smoking may have been imported legally from near Durban, South Africa. Interesting learning our international cannabis news here in the Drug War Data Mine. We'll have that post available up on marijuanapolitics.com. And remember, every day at noon, every weekday that is, at noon Pacific time, you can catch my latest post on marijuanapolitics.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the page, you can flip through all of the columnists, and then eventually they put the column up there at the top of the page once it's got some more hits. Stick around, we got Dr. Mitch coming right after this in our cannabis Q&A.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
As a police officer, I walked a beat, served on the vice squad and SWAT team, and became an expert on drug addiction. I saw firsthand the effects of Ohio's destructive marijuana laws. Simply put, they don't work. Ohio spends over $100 million each year on this failed effort. It's time for marijuana reform, so law enforcement can spend their time cracking down on real criminals and making Ohio a safer place for our families. Vote yes on 3.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Cannabis Q&A. Dr. Mitch is in the house. How you doing, Mitch?
Can you hear me okay?
We've got you. Your Skype sounds live and clear.
Super. I had a wonderful talk with all the UAlbany incoming freshmen, and I'm hoping at least 200 of them have tuned in today.
Oh, good. That explains some of the people, some of the jump in the listener numbers. Okay. That was a kind of like, wow, what a good Monday this is. Welcome, Albany listeners. And Dr. Mitch, we just went off talking about in the drug war data mines about marijuana statistics and information from Africa. I'm wondering if you have any anything to add or anything you might have knowledge of from the African continent on marijuana.
Well, what's funny is we literally have amazing history of cannabis use in Africa, including folks who would make a pipe out of the earth, literally make a big bowl in the ground and then have a big stem in the ground itself and smoke cannabis in the earth. And the whole idea of the earth being your pipe really always appealed to me.
I like that idea too. I'm going to have to figure out how that's done. I want to remind folks that we're taking live questions for Dr. Mitch here in our chat room on 420radio.org. And don't forget that Dr. Mitch has a new podcast on cannabisradio.com. What's the title of the podcast, by the way?
Burning Issues.
Burning Issues. That's right. Burning Issues with Dr. Mitch. Check it out on cannabisradio.com. Now, Dr. Mitch, I'd like to start off with some of the stories that we've seen bouncing around the past week here in the science cannabis section. And one of them, I swear that I'm having deja vu or I'm smoking really good weed, but it was this story on the U.S. government says cannabis kills cancer cells. I've seen it on Yahoo News. The Guardian picked it up. It's been everywhere. But I thought this was already on the U.S. government's NIH website. Am I mistaken?
I'm stunned by this myself, and I'm sure you're in Oregon, so your cannabis is better than mine. But the clincher here is, yes, we do have evidence that cannabinoids can slow or actually decrease tumor growth, but these are relatively old data. I'm glad that the media has kind of jumped on this. But for our listeners, I'm afraid it's just not news.
You know, it's almost like the story that pops up every now and then. The first ever TV ad for marijuana is like people in Sacramento are going, I've seen ads since 2009. What are you talking about? So
exactly. Exactly.
All right. And by the way, yes, my cannabis is better here in Oregon.
I'll be out in September.
We'll see you soon. The next story that I thought was interesting, I had a few people bring this one up to me. The story that says nicotine changes marijuana's effect on the brain. And as a side note, the stat that was cited in there, 70% of cannabis users also smoke tobacco. Is that true?
Unfortunately, yes, and I really want to discourage that. I mean, particularly given the respiratory data we see now, not only should you vaporize, definitely put down the cancer sticks, because cannabis is great, tobacco is not.
When they're figuring that stat out, are they including people that smoke spliffs or blunts where it's a tobacco leaf wrapper, or they're mixing tobacco in marijuana, or is it strictly people that also smoke cigarettes?
So they literally just ask, do you use cannabis? Do you use tobacco?
Okay.
And so in some ways it's a little bit user defined. And actually we're doing better than folks in Australia and some of the European countries, where it's just kind of a habit that they mix their cannabis with tobacco all the time. And particularly the folks who end up holding their hits under the delusion that that's going to make them higher are really putting themselves at risk for a lot of respiratory irritation.
So what was this change in the brain when nicotine and marijuana were working together?
I don't want to make too much of this, because it's actually this oddball moderator effect where basically hippocampal size relates to memory if you use both drugs, but not if you use cannabis alone or tobacco alone. I want to see it replicate before we make a big deal out of it. But really the message that's important is we have no idea about how drugs interact very well. And my student, Sarah Smucker Barnwell, actually did some of the first work on this, and I feel like we're still in its infancy. Every time I'm on here saying we don't know blah, blah, blah about cannabis, I always feel terrible, but we certainly don't know a lot about any two drugs combined. In these data, it's essentially the size of your hippocampus. Usually, if it's smaller, your memory is worse, but for folks who use tobacco and cannabis, if it's smaller, it's better. It's kind of an oddball anomaly, and I again don't want to exaggerate the effect until we actually see it in another sample.
You know, when we're talking about all these other studies that we've discussed over the years here on the show, are they teasing out that 70% of these people are also tobacco users?
What's funny is, of all things, that old schizotypy and psychosis data, I mean, anybody who's worked with schizophrenics know they can really smoke a lot of cigarettes. And it's starting to suggest, particularly given some of the vascular effects of nicotine on the brain, maybe nicotine is actually part of this cause of this genetic combination with cannabis creating psychotic symptoms. And I was delighted to see that. But no, we have not been particularly careful about either nicotine or caffeine, which everybody, you know, just assumes everybody's doing. And I feel like the researchers need to be more careful about that.
Yeah, Brian Kerr in Canada just brought that up in the chat room. What about coffee and cannabis? I mean, I guess we probably don't have a lot of info on that either.
And they're rather disparate neurotransmitter systems. So coffee essentially inhibits the adenosine functioning. And so here's this neurotransmitter that generally makes you tired that's suddenly being inhibited. And that's not how we stereotypically think of stimulants. And it's just a whole new world out there. So it'll be intriguing to see if more data get gathered that appreciate, in a sense, the combination of drugs.
All right. This third story, I thought, what an interesting story, because usually when we talk about drug testing in sports, we're all upset because, you know, in the NFL, how can you stop these guys from smoking weed? It's good for concussions. It's good for pain, blah, blah, blah. But this is electronic sports, and they're banning weed because it's a enhancing drug. Can you talk a bit about this?
I mean, I always want to joke, you know, if the reward is a Twinkie, the stoned person might really be motivated. But this is the whole notion of electronic sports, I realize, is kind of comic to some folks. But there's a subset of folks who my student Joey DeLeo showed, basically, that, you know, if your attentional capacity seems to be problematic, there are definitely some situations where cannabis may help your attention. And if you're playing an electronic sport, of course, a focus improvement is going to be a score improvement. The idea that they're banning this under those circumstances is consistent, at least, with some of their other moves to, say, ban Adderall or some of the other stimulants that are ADHD-related drugs. But I'm just never going to be able to say cannabis is a sports enhancing drug with a straight face.
Well, all right. I did think that was quite interesting, but also from the perspective of what the weed and video games go together, like what, you know, weed and video games, I mean, you'd have to expect they've been smoking weed. All right, let's get to this other story here. Local story, Clark County in the Columbian, their little newspaper up there, reported there's, as Joe Pesci would say, there's been no upswing of marijuana use among the Utes. The Utes aren't using it anymore. And doesn't this comport with what we're finding in states that have legalized and medical marijuana states throughout the country?
And what's amazing is those Portugal data from 2001 suggests that decriminalizing amounts for personal use also lower teen rates of use. And even those seventh, eighth, and ninth, those young teens who we usually don't even talk about. And all I can say is I'm completely delighted. I'm not fully, you know, able to contemplate the mechanism, but I'm guessing that, you know, no teenager wants to use grandma's nausea med. And I hate to say it, there's a little anti-hippie sentiment out there. So my daughter's 14 now, and she says, come pick me up, but don't wear a marijuana shirt. It's like, it's just not hip to do whatever your parents do, and it's showing up in these data.
Here comes my dad with his stupid gold leaf pin. Oh, Dr. Mitch, you've got it tough, man. You've got it tough. Another piece of data coming from the Washington State has to do with their traffic numbers and saying that there's been a doubling in the people who were in fatal auto accidents. And, you know, I think we talked about that last week as well. But again, we're seeing no increase in traffic fatalities overall. Anything else you can add to this debate on marijuana and traffic risk and death and all of this? Scare.
I mean, as you know, Paul Armentano is definitely the man on this, but the bottom line is without an increase in total traffic related deaths, I just can't get too worked up about it. And the fact that literally everybody, you know, has a legal market, so we would expect an increase in folks who test positive for THC, but it wasn't a disparate increase in these traffic death related THC positive tests. So I mean, I don't think people should drive high. I'm, you know, down on the whole idea of anyone driving impaired, even under Benadryl or fatigue or anything like that. But I don't feel like these data support the idea that a legalized market has somehow increased traffic deaths, because that's really not what's happening.
And for those of us out there that are interested in this issue, I understand Normal has endorsed this app you can get called My Canary. And I've been doing some research on this and spoke with communicated with the manufacturer via email. But it's very interesting. Four different little tests that you set your own baseline on, and then you can take it at any time. Gives you a red light, yellow light, green light, and don't leave unless you get a green light, I guess is the story there, Dr. Mitch.
I love the idea of this, and Paul was, you know, instrumental in helping these guys out. And the clincher is, I think you should take this anytime you're tired, or if you've, you know, had a lot of cough syrup. You know, this is a great way to make sure that you just, you know, make it home safe. And I want to emphasize to everybody that just, you know, taking in the cab once in a while is actually kind of a fun little luxury. It's often rarely particularly expensive, and you get home safe, no problem.
And now there's Uber as well.
Exactly.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is the host of Burning Issues on CannabisRadio.com. He's the chair of the Normal Board of Directors, and he is the most popular professor at SUNY Albany, I imagine.
I got a pretty big class.
So if you didn't get a chance to get your question in, or you're shy and you just like to take it offline, you can do that. The email address for Dr. Mitch is 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And Dr. Mitch will be out here in Portland for the Normal Board of Directors meeting. We'll catch up to him and get some audio for the show. It'd be good to see you, Dr. Mitch. Oh my gosh, he's gone offline, unfortunately. The Skype has dropped Dr. Mitch, but that's okay. It was the end of the segment anyway. We'll see Dr. Mitch here in a couple weeks for the Normal Board of Directors meeting, although now that I think about it, I might be in Atlanta that day. Well, we'll send Herb Thrasher after him. That's what we'll do. I have a hectic travel schedule for the next 6 weeks, people. If you want to know where I'm going to be, check out 420radio.org/schedule. All my public events are there. All right, we're going to take a break, give our anti-drug public service announcement of the day. And when we're back from that radical rant, legalized marijuana shouldn't mean only in your home. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
That's what I said.
The voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
In the U.S., marijuana is the most commonly identified illegal drug in fatal crashes. Marijuana, it impairs driving.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Herb Thrasher, and I've got a bong, and you're listening to 420 Radio.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Legal marijuana shouldn't mean only in your home. Sure, marijuana may be legal in 4 states now, but not if you want to use it outside of your home. Colorado clamped down on private marijuana clubs. Now, Mason Tevert and Brian Vincente, the people behind Amendment 64, are working on an amendment for the city of Denver to legalize marijuana use in bars or pot bars, something like that. But to this day, Colorado has got no place for people to go and gather to be with others, to share, to socialize, to network, and use legal cannabis. Washington State just this year passed a bill felonizing any sort of public accommodation for adult pot smokers. Now, before that, there'd been clubs like Frankie's and Olympia that had gotten around the clean air bans and the liquor bans by having a separate private club area staffed solely by volunteers. They went to every extent they could, and that wasn't good enough, so now that's felonized. You run any place where intentionally or even unintentionally marijuana smoking becomes the norm, that's a felony in Washington State. It's so ridiculous, it forced Seattle Hemp Fest. The year before, 2014 at Hemp Fest, they created this fenced-off, invisible-to-the-public area for adult cannabis consumption. And they touted it as a model for outdoor festivals, how you could handle adult cannabis consumption. Here's a place they can go and the kids can't see the smoke or the smoking and it's off to the side, right? They couldn't do that this year because that would be a felony. It counterproductively forces all the toking back out into the open for all the public to see. Now, my state of Oregon has decided that any venue with a liquor license is a public place where marijuana can't be used. even if the venue isn't serving liquor at the time. This has forced High Times to have to scramble to try to find some place to hold its Portland Cannabis Cup event. They've given up on Seattle. They can't find a place in Seattle to host their Cannabis Cup event. Ironically, before marijuana was legalized, Seattle had held multiple medical cannabis cups. Portland had yet to hold one, but it had held Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards and other events, Portland Hemp Stock and so forth. As marijuana became more legal in the Pacific Northwest, it became less legal to use it publicly. And now Alaska's moving to shut down the few Bring Your Own Buds volunteer-run venues that sprang up. I was at one at 420 Southwest 3rd in Anchorage, and I always forget what their name is. But in Anchorage, this club, and understand these clubs, we're not talking about being served marijuana, being able to buy marijuana and use it. These are all bring your own bud places, from the one in Anchorage to the world famous Cannabis Cafe here in Oregon and other places. We're talking bring your own marijuana. Just have a private space, a public space, a place where we can all gather and just use our own marijuana together. And they're moving to shut all these places down. Now, can you name any legal product that is only legal if the public can't see you using it? Guns? No. No, you can carry your hunting rifle around on a rack in the back of your pickup truck while you drive to public lands to shoot it outdoors. Or you can go to a building for the express purpose, open to the public, for shooting targets for fun. Tobacco? Yeah, there have been a lot of restrictions on smoking lately. But there are still plenty of outdoor places where you can smoke cigarettes in full view of the public. I get off the plane at PDX and I go out to where the Max light rail train is, and that I have to go by the smoking area, this little yellow lined area by a pillar outside Portland Airport where all the smokers are congregated. There's plenty of places where we, the public, can see smoking. And even sometimes inhale some of it. So not tobacco, alcohol? Alcohol. Yeah, there's laws against public drunkenness, and some places have laws against open containers, but there's plenty of places where you can drink alcohol, both indoors and outdoors. Restaurants with open patios where the kids are walking right by. So why, in the four legal marijuana states, do the laws require the sequestration of pot smokers to their homes with the curtains drawn? Geez, I mean, aside from sex toys, and even then, there's private clubs, but aside from sex toys, I can't think of any other legal product that requires its use to remain out of public view in order to remain legal. Pornography, I guess? Is that it? Marijuana is like pornography. You can buy it, you can have it, you can produce it, but by God, nobody can see it. Is that it? Pot's like pornography. So I was kind of shocked when I read an opinion on The Cannabist, the Denver Post's marijuana section, an opinion from Normal's founder and, full disclosure, my good friend, Keith Straub, who expressed that public marijuana consumption should be limited to political protests or smokeouts and not allowed at general public events. Huh? And the quote, "Marijuana smoking is a social activity and we need a place to do it. We shouldn't fight for the right to smoke in existing bars. We need our own places," end quote. Well, I'm all for vapor lounges, cannabis cafes, coffee shops, whatever we want to call a public facility where only marijuana consumption is happening. But our choice of places to toke shouldn't be limited to only those kind of venues. Separate but equal is an un-American policy for solving any issue of public accommodations. If a venue is set up to allow alcohol consumption, then it is prepared to handle adults having fun by altering their consciousness. If a venue is set up to allow tobacco smoking, then it is accommodating a smelly smoke that could be inhaled by others. So, If a venue allows drinking and smoking, how is it not the perfect place for adults to alter their consciousness with a smelly smoke? We are being forced to remain in the green closet because elements of society still hate and fear us. This is stark bigotry. It's prejudice. As my friend Leland Berger says, they don't like our kind. They demand that our existence not be socially acceptable or normalized. And if we're content fighting for just cannabis-only public venues, then we are tacitly agreeing that we need to be kept separate from polite society. I, for one, don't want to be relegated to only having the choice of the Cannabis Cafe. I love Madeline and the Cannabis Cafe. They got great acts, they got great fun nights, bingo, all sorts of stuff they're doing out there. Bands, jam sessions. Bring your own cannabis, have a good time. $10 at the door. But maybe Buddy Guy comes to town and he's playing at one of the bars or the clubs downtown Portland. Why should I be forced to have to choose to consume alcohol if I want to buzz, knowing that there's a place right outside on a patio where the cigarette and cigar smokers can go create a smelly smoke, but I can't join them and smoke a joint before I go see Buddy Guy play? Why should we accept any less treatment and respect than the people who consume the other legal products? Is the product legal or is it not? The bar, tavern, nightclub, or lounge is a public house or a pub with a long tradition in America. Our Constitution was written by men who racked up a huge bar tab. We shouldn't be denied participation in the American tradition of gathering to party just because we picked the safer choice of party favors. We shouldn't be forced to go sober or more likely hotbox the car in the parking lot because we want to see the great band playing at some outdoor festival or meet some new attractive people at the singles club. Regulate marijuana like alcohol, right? So unless someone's passing a new law restricting drinkers to the possession of 72 ounces of booze that may only be used at home, we still have a long way to go to make that line come true. Perhaps we will evolve to the point where it has to, like our fight for racial equality, move from segregation, from slavery to segregation to final equality, or our fight for gay and lesbian rights moved from first through civil unions before it got to gay marriage. Maybe our fight for acceptance starts with cannabis-only bars. Maybe it starts with cannabis cafes, but that can't be the end point. If there are places, with parking lots, mind you, where people can take their cars, purchase alcohol on site, enjoy it, and then be trusted to get in their car sober enough to drive, there is no reason we should not have a similar situation when it comes to the use of marijuana. At the very least, a club we can go to, purchase marijuana, and use it on site. And of all the places fighting to legalize marijuana, finally one state has put that in their initiative. The folks at Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol in Massachusetts, the MPP group, has added within their initiative that a place that sells marijuana may allow its consumption on site. Could Massachusetts be the first state that breaks through with on-site cannabis consumption at marijuana dispensaries or pot shops? We have yet to see if it even makes the ballot, but that would be a watershed moment in our policies here in America. But keep in mind that what we're talking about is our rights. It's our liberty that we're talking about here. Marijuana is just the messenger. This is about how we want to be treated as equals in a society, not separated by artificial labels
and artificial boundaries based on what we look like, what we believe, or for that matter, how we like to party. Nobody has the jurisdiction over your body or your mind. It's up to you what to put in it and do with it. Nobody else. That's all the time we got for hour one, but live listeners, stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. Got plenty more stories. For everyone here in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you